Hi, everybody, and welcome to podcast number 38 of the Alexi Sale podcast. And wow, have we got a podcast for you? Well, we've always got a podcast for you, haven't we, really? Because by definition, if I'm doing a podcast, then we've got a podcast for you.
Apart from last time, it was a video cast?
No, it was just, video. When we did, Ogmios. We went for a drive with Ogmios. But I managed to tempt him into going through. Well, after we went for a drink, and we tempted him into getting a parking ticket, and then we also got him. We through being too interesting, he actually drove through a school zone. So it cost him a fortune.
He got that and the congestion charge.
And the congestion charge. Yeah. So we're paying for all that, really. But
Respect to your Ogmios, and thank you for the sacrifice that day.
Yeah. No, I think he's a really interesting character, you know, and it's obviously there is that kind of Zen idea has also it's got implications out about how you comport yourself. It's got many implications outside of the arena of driving, really, about understanding other people's motivations, trying to be, you know, the best human being towards other people that you can be and stuff, you know, it's got a lot of meaning, really, and I very much enjoyed it. And I think we're going to do some more stuff with him, and also he's pointed we've become influencers, haven't we? He's pointed us in the direction of a manufacturer of e-bikes who may be providing us with some e-bikes in the future to do some cycling. Because I haven't done one of them cycling videos for I just got kind of fed up with them, really.
Yeah, so we are in the throng of summer, so it's a good time to get back on the bike. So
They were very popular, really. I mean, I think they're partly a lockdown thing, but...
That is how it started, wasn't it?
That was lockdown, how it started, but only people did like them, so I just kind of got fed up with doing them, really, partly because of the elaborate contraptions that I kind of had to have screwed to the bike to.
There's no way around that, though, if we want to see your face while cycling. So, have you ever heard of this Francis Bourgeois guy?
No.
Who does he got really famous on Instagram and TikTok. He was like a train fanatic, one of those train watcher. Dudes.
Right.
Train spotters, not train spotters, watcher. Yeah. But he really loves more classic trains and antique trains. And he's like, oh my God, it's the B1213. Here it comes. And then it would zoom past him and he'd start giggling frantically. And he's a very charming and likable chap, and somehow got the whole nation invested in really nerdy train models. But he would strap essentially a GoPro camera, his head, and it's dangling in front of his face, but it's got a really wide lens, and his face would fill the whole screen.
Right.
So that's one way of filming your own face,
right?
While doing activities, and it's kind of become his trademark, that face cam. I find it really fucking hideous when they cut.
No, I mean it was what we had to do, really, wasn't it, to get there.
The other option is to wear a harness round your body. And it juts out from your chest and again in your face. And thirdly, strap something to the bike, to the handlebar. And that's what we do with the.
Yeah.
But those things are really fiddly and they break easily. Like the one we have is currently broken. I need to order another one before we start doing.
And we tried to. Seen this. Where was it we went with that guy, that poor guy, Welling Garden City or somewhere?
Garden City.
It didn't work at all, did it, really?
What did we try with that? To have two of you go?
Two microphones, And it's just, that's Wilf, by the way. He's gone very...
Hey, Wilf. It was going well. I think there was just one malfunction too many that ended up making it.
Right.
It was just a hodgepodge of different footage, different sound that doesn't match up. And we did we cycled for miles without realizing the camera had fucking stopped working. And it was a failure on my part. I take full responsibility for that. His name was Sean. He was really nice.
He's really nice. I did tell him we would remount it at some point, which we should do, really.
We could do that on the bloody
e-bikes. Oh, that's true. We could do that on the e-bike. Except he'd have to be on somebody'd have to be on an ordinary bike, wouldn't they?
Mm. I think another part of the complication was that there were two of you trying to stay next to each other. So maybe we don't have that. You can just we can have an interview with him.
Yes.
And then you go on a bike ride and we can put the footage from the interview over the top or something.
Yes.
Anyway, that's really dull. But thank you to everyone who watched the Ogmios YouTube version podcast we did. That was episode 37. If you haven't seen it yet, go to the Alexis L YouTube channel, Alexis L Official.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up there with so many lovely comments and feedback. Well, lots of people saying, finally, Ogmios and Alexi united. And some people very surprised and pleasantly surprised to find that you two are on the same YouTube video. I thought I'm quite proud of that, that we did a driving film with Ogmios from the Zen School of Motoring.
Yeah.
But one person wasn't impressed. Helen, not she wasn't impressed, but she didn't agree with the sentiment. She goes, I completely disagree that driving is intimate. I find it the opposite. Car driving makes us selfish and insular.
It does, but it doesn't have to. I think
he said you guys are unique in that point of view. Even the way we park our cars is selfish. And she's from Devon, and the drivers are selfish down in Devon.
Yeah, I feel her pain.
But inversely, someone said...
conversely, I think you mean.
Converse. No, I'm not talking about shoes, Alexi. Someone said, you said Ogmios thinks his videos makes drivers safer and better. Well, he agrees. He says Birmingham is cowboy country for drivers. People drive like maniacs, and him and his wife resort to the Ogmios School of Zen Motoring to keep calm, maintain their Zen. Otherwise, they'd be getting in fights all over the place. So it saves them from getting into altercations out there.
Indeed.
Someone was impressed that you do Tai Chi. And someone said, sorry to hear, I was unwell. I'm much better now. Thank you for saying that, Bernadette. Nothing to worry about there. The Ashley Neal guy that Ogmios mentioned.
Yeah, that he should get him on. And he's actually the son of Phil Neal, the famous Liverpool footballer.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
There are several comments that are indicating that they would like to see us talk to him. He's from Liverpool, so we could talk about Liverpool, cycling infrastructure, the football dad thing.
Yeah.
He's quite zen too. Apparently his YouTube channel is quite popular. Interesting. I don't know. I don't know much about him other than what Ogmios said.
Yeah. Fucking do it, man. Should we get on to what we're doing this week, though? Or we just chat on forever? Oh, by the way, Strangers on the Train is going out on Radio 4 at the moment, 7:15 on Sunday, just to plug my...
7:15 on Sunday, Strangers on the Train. And if you miss it, I'm sure you can catch it up.
BBC Sounds.
Yeah. Amazing series.
It is.
Shows how...
really shit nice everybody else.
How nice you are. Like, you are just so personable and easy to talk to when you want to be.
When I want to be. when I'm being paid.
Love that show. So this is not the Ogmios episode. We are talking... Who are we doing? What are we doing today?
Well, this week, what a treat we've got for you. We are talking to actor Maxime Peak. Maxime Peak is both a beacon of talentedness in terms of being a performer, being in the theatre and on the television, the main star of Dinner Ladies and Shameless and many other TV productions. And so me and Maxime talk about the several TV productions that we've been in together. And we also talk about her politics, because she is somebody who's very much engaged in politics and has kind of, in a sense, got caught. One of the first signs of the extraordinary malevolence of Keir Starmer was a kind of hoo-ha that she got involved in. She talks quite a lot about that, quite movingly, I think. And just about what it is, what makes you a socialist, why one is a socialist, really.
In fact, you are both performing tonight at a benefit for the attacks Freedom on Jenin in Palestine.
Yeah.
Oh, for specifically for Theatre
Jenin. Freedom Theatre, yeah, which I think the Israelis have.
You get into that on the podcast, but that means I'll be able to get a nice picture of you two together, and I'll put that on our Instagram, which is Alexis L Pod. Follow us on Alexis L Pod on Instagram. Yeah, she's amazing. She's so cool and funny and easygoing, and it was such a pleasure. And I want to give the listener a warning that you will suddenly hear my voice halfway through. I ask a question like 40 minutes in, and I've been silent up until then. So don't be scared at the sound of my voice when it shows up. But yeah, it was a lovely interview chat. You mentioned in a previous episode, the one with Diane Morgan.
Yes.
About how you first met Maxine, which you don't bring up here. Or did you meet her on Marple? Was that the first time you ever met?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And then you invited her out to your house. And then she got scared that you were going to like...
In my mind, I thought she was a bit worried, yeah.
That you were going to like start hitting on her or something. And then Linda came home and she was over the moon. You've been fast friends ever since.
Yeah.
And that really comes across here. You two are very nice together.
Oh, that's nice. Well, should we get on with it then?
Let's do it.
All right. Lexi Sell, Maxine Peak podcast. Yalla, Habibti. Well, I haven't done this for a while because our last podcast was recorded in a car. But I am very excited to say that my guest today on this podcast is Maxine Peak.
Hiya.
Actor.
Actor.
You don't mind?
No, actor. I fluctuate, but I think actor. No.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, we could probably go show busy. The first time we worked together, darling, was actually on a Miss Marple, wasn't it?
It was Marple. It was very modern. They dropped the Miss.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
No, we were just Marple.
And it was the they do it with mirrors?
Yes, it was.
Yeah? And yes, it was an all-star cast? And Brian Cox was in
it. Brian Cox. What happened to him? And Joan Collins,
yes.
I mean, I never met her. I saw her from afar at the tea table.
I had a scene with her. I talked to her about Marxism.
Did you? What
explain the theory. She thought it was amazing. She was really interested in the kind of Hegelian dialectic. And, you know, she'd never... we didn't have any lines, but there was a body that was carried through, and me and Joan Collins kind of stand there and look at it.
We do lots of looking in these things, don't you?
Yeah.
They're actually, I don't think I'm doing one again. Spend about 4 days just sort of trying to look like maybe you did it.
Yes,
because everyone asks, you have to do a look that I didn't do it, but maybe I did just for the suspense.
Yeah. But it was, they were very generous with, I remember they were very, they were very generous with the cars. Do you remember that each of us had our own limousine?
I remember because we got in a car together. That's true. Just when we thought we were on the brink of the collapse of capitalism, didn't we?
It was 2008, yeah. I got a fair bit of stand-up out of that because the driver that we had, that woman, her son worked in the city and she said, have you heard the... Bank of America have just bought Meryl Streep. I'm like, really? But yeah, it was the worldwide financial crash of 2008 when we were making that, And Brian Cox was living. You know, Brian Cox lived in an adobe. He described it to me, sort of half-heartedly tried to sell it to me. He lived in an adobe kind of New Mexican style house in Camden Town.
Didn't know that. Didn't get that close.
No, well, you know, he saw me as a mark. he could sell his bizarre house to me. But it was me, it was you, it was Joan Collins, Alex Jennings,
yes. Sean Hughes, Penny Wilton,
Brian Cox.
Sarah Smart.
Sarah
Smart. Who else? Oh,
there was more. It was star studded.
Liam, there was a lot. wasn't there?
Anyway, that was the first time we worked together. Yeah. And then, did we do something else after my mind's gone blank?
We did Red Top.
Oh, Red Top. Yeah, of course we did. You can see I don't do any preparation for this, even to the point of, but that was for him to the point of remembering things I've actually done. No research, not even doing research inside my own head.
That was just like a holiday in Totnes, wasn't it?
It was.
Peter Richardson's expense, or maybe not. I don't know. Somebody's expense.
Somebody was paying for it. We had a lovely dinner with your dad, didn't we?
We did. Yeah.
I don't know.
I enjoyed it. Yeah, I don't think you can have on this. Yeah, we'd in that hub. We stayed in that hotel.
Yeah, in Totnes or somewhere.
And then, yeah. It was very nice. But I always remember I was doing Midsummer Night's Dream, Russell T. Davis, and I was playing Titania, and they shaved all my head at the side. So I had this funny sort of like a mullet.
Right.
And there was a woman in the bar, and she smiled at me, and I smiled back, and she went, "You are my aromatherapist, aren't you?" And I said, "No, I'm not." She went, "Well, you must be." I said, "No, I don't do. I'm not. That's not my trade." And I said, "I'm not actually from Totnes." And she looked at me. She said, "Well, you look like you're from Totnes." So I don't know what that was. I was like, "Oh, it must have been the hair and the
absolutely." You
know. Yeah.
That was a late period comic strip film in which you played Rebecca Brooks.
Yes.
And you roller skated everywhere.
I roller skated, yeah.
Did you roller skate anywhere?
No, I'd roller skated as a kid. We used to have in the Nevada in Bolton, which burnt down under spurious circumstances, which in Jim Cartwright's brilliant play, Road, he nicknamed it the brothel on wheels. So that was your rites of passage as a kid in Bolton. It was, everyone was basically to get a, everyone on Saturday went roller skating and then copped off around the back. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
We cut out the wheeled element, I think, in Liverpool. Did you ever think about that? Yeah. You didn't need the roller skates. You could just have sex.
We were a bit naive. But yeah, so I'd done a bit of roller skating, and then there's a roller rink in Wigan, can't even say it, that prior to when I got the job, I thought, I should go and have a few nights. And I was surprised it's quite a popular thing.
Really?
Well, in a roller rink.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I've got stuck once in London when at night. Have you seen it in the evening when? So, it's amazing. Hundreds of people.
Yeah,
I didn't know what was. Kids. I was just having a wander through and.
Yeah. That happens. They come up the street sometimes.
But no, that was good fun. And that was a bit of a bucket list. You know what I mean? I loved comic strip.
Yes.
So thank you for all the years of pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome. We got paid a bit, not much.
Did you?
Not a lot, really. But we got to some interesting places. And then, of course, we are also without the show business record, we're also, I guess, performers on the left of the.
Yeah.
The political spectrum, really.
On everything.
So we can. In fact, we're doing a benefit on Tuesday. We're doing a benefit on Tuesday for the Janine Freedom Theatre in Janine, which has been the Israelis wreck it again.
Yeah, they've damaged quite a bit of it, haven't they? And there was, one of the young members was shot, wasn't she, in the stray bullet in the garden. She was murdered. So,
So that's all good. So the other thing that we have in common where we intersect earlier in our lives is Victoria Wood. So I don't know when I interviewed Diane Morgan, said that you were best friends, that you met on the steps of Bolton Youth Theatre.
Well, we met actually auditioning, a bit like Victoria Wood and Julie Walters. We met at Manchester Theatre School auditioning.
Right. So how old would you have been then?
I'm a year older than Diane, although she looks about 20 years younger than me. I was 19 because it was my second year of trying to get in, and it was Diane's first year. And everybody who was auditioning had to do the audition speech monologue in front of everyone else.
Right.
And I always tell the story. I still remember Diane sort of toddling down and putting her hair in a high ponytail and then doing this amazing, this monologue that I'd heard loads of, you know, young women do it before and like overdone it and really done big caricature, and she just did it so funny but subtly, and I was like, she's brilliant. Who's that? So I cornered her with this, packed us all off a cup of tea while they decided who and who wasn't getting through to the next round. And I just said, that was brilliant. And she was like, oh, thanks very much. And I said, where are you from? She said, oh, Kersley. I said, oh, I'm only up the road in Bolton. So we exchanged landline numbers.
Right.
And said, right, let's write stuff together. Let's, you know, we were going to, you know, I've still got little funny posters where we're in photo booths and we were going, how do we get an agent? Well, we'll put a show on in a community centre in Bolton. We had all these, we'd sit in a pub pretending to be with Nell and I, you know, obsessing over that when we were about 18, 19. And then we both went our separate ways to drama school. But yeah, so I spotted her genius.
Yes.
On. So thank you, know.
Well, and I suppose the fame with her came. I think she's suddenly big in the States, isn't she?
Yeah, I would imagine so, yeah. Diane doesn't tell you what's, she's underplays it all.
I'm furious about that because I think because they've started showing Conk on Netflix in the States without, you think of the kind of shit I had to do to try and be big in the States and then the humiliations I went through and failed. And she's just fucking on Netflix and she's massive. It's not fair.
No, she must be, because I texted her and she's not got back to me, so she's changed.
She's gone away. We can go round to her house because we're just there.
We'll go knock on the door and say, I'm going to cry, take me with you.
Yeah.
And she goes off to the stairs. Oh, me,
right. I know. Yeah, I think that desire has died in me now, like a lot of passion when you get in your 70, nearly 71, you know, it's all that ambition's dead now.
But that's the thing with our job. You never know. That's why I keep going. You never know what's right in that corner.
I'm
naive, but I look, you know, there's nothing wrong with it.
I think I'm pretty certain.
I'm not going to be big in America.
I guess it was her. It was Conk, and I asked her, so I can't remember. She did stand up, didn't she?
She did stand up.
Yeah, we're talking about somebody else.
Well, no, it's fine. She's much more interested than I am. No, she did dine to stand up for a bit, and then, I mean, because she was always like character comedy, and like even when we were like younger, she wrote the, you know, her stuff was always like really sort of left field and brilliant. And then she did the thing, didn't she, with Joe Wilkinson, two episodes of MASH, and I think she did Edinburgh. But I think with Diane, it was sort of a slow rise because she would never compromise. Right. You know, I was cheap. I was just like, whatever you need me to do to get a career, I'll do. But I always admired Diane because she sort of, you know, she stuck. I think she had lots of sort of offers of things, but, you know, it was about sort of adapting her work, and she was like, I'm not interested. I mean, I could be putting words into her mouth here, but that's what I felt, because I used to think, where is she? Why is she not, you know, come on, Diane, you know. And then of course she came, you know, from the outside, and
yeah,
and now she's big in America. Good luck to her. That's what I thought. bitterness.
Yes. That she's known in Sacramento. I couldn't be happier. That she'll be, she's probably taking a meeting with Matt Damon as we speak. Exactly. We're sitting here doing this. So the early years, I suppose we should roll back to, how long after you sort of graduated from, well, I don't, drama school was Dinner Ladies, really?
I'm being quite smuggy, but I was still at Rada.
Yeah.
I had no agent interest whatsoever, and I was in my third year at Rada. So when you're in your third year doing your third year shows, agents and casting directors come and people, you know, you sit in your dressing room before a show, people ripping open letters and going, oh, another offer from William Morris. I mean, that's showing me age now. And you know, and I'd be like, no way, nobody's interested. And then I got a letter from Burnett Granger, and it was a brilliant agent who's no longer with us, called Lindsay Granger. And she said, oh, I really, you know, really like your work. Would you come in and meet us? So I went to meet them, and I always remember her saying to me, "You remind me of a young Geraldine James." And I thought, oh, she's a proper actress. That's cool. Because I was expecting, I don't know, they'd just be, you know, not taking me very seriously. I went, oh, God, she's like a proper serious actress. That's fabulous. And then I looked at a post on the wall and went, oh, Stuart Granger, Scaramouche. She went, oh, Stuart Granger, are you a fan? And she went, that's my father. And I went, all right. And I went, oh, I'm going with them. My mum went, oh, yeah, you should go with them. So I signed with them. And then while I was still, at Rider, and they'd read the breakdown for this new sitcom that somebody called Victoria Wood was writing. And she said, oh, well, I've, you know, and they suggested me and they said, oh, well, she's still at drama school, so we're not sure, we've nothing to see the work she's done. So I'd done this documentary, South Bank Show, where they'd followed me leaving, you know, Humble Beginnings.
That's another bit.
Oh, don't.
Bitterness of mine. I've never done the South Bank Show. I used to think when they interviewed me, I'd say, what took you so long?
And then
they cancelled it, so it's never going to happen. Anyway, this bitterness on bitterness, yeah. Really. Never. Anyway,
So they followed me. Because what happened was, I got a scholarship to go to RADA that paid for all my fees and maintenance, and I got it awarded at the Evening Standard was, and it was actually from the Associated newspaper, so the Daily Mail paid for me to go to drama school. It's your fault, Sally. I keep saying to them. Yeah. Stop having a go at me, it's your fault. So I got this amazing scholarship, the Patricia Ruthermere Award, and so I got three years paid for fees and maintenance, and when I collected the award, I was probably about 3-4 months into my first year term at RADA. A guy called Daniel Wiles, who directed South Bank Show, saw me and saw this sort of young woman getting up going, oh, thanks very much. And he went, what, people like her? He literally said, I didn't know if they took people like you at RADA. I said, well, probably after me, they won't be doing it again. So he said, we would like to make a documentary about you. So he approached RADA and I said, oh, no, absolutely not. Because they'd just done one on the Drama Centre, I remember, and I remember watching it thinking it was quite traumatic.
Really?
Because, you know, it went through bit by bit of the training, and it looked a bit, whoa, I thought. Anyway, Nicholas Barter, then principal, said, look, it'd be really good publicity for blah, 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 blah. So, of course, I said, right, okay, I'll do it. So we did it. And actually, Diane features in that. And ironically, yesterday was, I can't remember, it was first aired yesterday, only because somebody sent me a little thing, it was on social media saying, 1996 it came out, and there's just a little clip of me and Diane Morgan going to Mrs. Walker, she was called. She lived in a bungalow in a posh bit of Bolton, going for elocution lessons.
Really?
Sat on this settee, like, both like, you know. And I'm going, bee, bye, bo, boo. And then going, I can't do it. So that, and it does actually look like a Peter Kay.
Right.
If you didn't know, you'd go, oh, I didn't know. When did Peter Kay do the one about the young woman who went to drama school? So
from that, how did that tie up with Dinner Lady?
Sorry, I've gone off on a tangent.
That's right.
So Victoria Wood, they sent her the documentary.
Right.
And she said, right, great, she can have an audition. So that's when I got the audition then for Twinkle, for Dinner Ladies.
Right.
So I went for the first audition.
Yeah.
And then I got a recall saying, you've got to come for the second audition. So I went in again. And that was sort of it. But the first audition, I went in and had to read, and Anne Reid was there and Thelma Barlow, they all sat around the table. So all your heroes. And Victoria Wood was a big, you know.
Yeah.
Growing up, that's who I wanted to be.
Yeah.
So it was all a bit, I didn't think it really sunk in. I think if it had sunk in, I probably would have, you know, lost my shit. But anyway, but I think she'd always said to me, it's because I was a lot bigger then. And I think because I'm quite tall and big, and I think she said it was your size that sort of clinched it, so.
Because it's partly because she died. I mean, I always think there's been a fair amount of, you know, documentaries and stuff about Victoria Wood, and they never quite, I mean, I suppose because she's dead, partly, they kind of, I mean, I think they, to a degree, miss the, I don't know, they missed both. I mean, she was a tougher kind of character than people kind of let on about. I mean, I just to go back. Yeah. I mean, I met her. We did The Secret Policeman's Other Ball. And then we were very friendly for a while, really. And she stayed at our flat and stuff and wrote, I think, the first series of probably one of the Victoria Wood TV series. She was working on it. while she was staying with us. And then we sort of slightly, I think she made a decision really. So I think she was sort of attracted by my kind of nihilism really. But after a while, she kind of decided to go more conventional. I don't know if I'm doing her a disservice really, but I'm not an easy person to be friends with really. Well, I wasn't then anyway. But after a while, we drifted apart really. But I think she's amazing. I don't know, amazing talent, really. She's great.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's anybody. There'll be anybody like her. You know yeah. what I mean? She is a one, you know, in that term of a complete one-off. And I think more than ever now, I mean, I'd never really got very close to her. I think, again, because I was in awe of her.
She was quite hard.
Yeah, and yeah. She was very complicated. And I talked to somebody the other day about it, and I said, well, I always thought she was sort of, you know, portrayed as well as this working class girl from the north, and that wasn't Vic. She was, I think it must have been really difficult for her because people wanted her to be so many things as well, didn't they? That she wasn't. And yeah, and because I think as well, there's that whole thing, isn't there? Very typecasting northerners, and she didn't fit into that box, you know, because obviously there's nobody above working class that live in the north of England, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if they are, they have to ship them in from the south, you know.
Yeah. You.
But she was tough, but I think sometimes it was about holding a control of her work, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, in fact, it was interesting because I think, I don't know, but when she was younger, she was very easily pushed around, really, because yeah. I remember because Jasper Carrot was also on that. That show that we did, and I remember, she said afterwards, after he left the dressing room, you know, that he'd had a way, you know, I can't remember now, but he, you know, she'd done a whole tour supporting him for like £10 or something, and he'd made her drive the van as well. I think I can't remember, and I remember she kind of got pushed around by she had a tour manager who wouldn't sort of do anything for a while. And I think she sort of made a decision to kind of toughen up as well, I think.
And I think that's, and especially with, I think with women, that's what, you know what I mean? Yeah. So you're always questioned on your decisions all the time. And I see it with a lot of female friends who use it like directors, because they're in positions where they'll say, I want that. And I've seen it with men who say, can we put the camera there? And the crew, if a man says it, we'll go and move the camera. Not always, but if a woman says it, it's like, are you sure you want it? I see right. it a lot. And yeah. I think you wouldn't quite, women seem to get questioned a lot more about their choices and decisions. And so I think there is a point where you have to give no option in a way. This is what I want and that's it. Even and if you show any
right,
sort of
yeah.
wavering, yeah. then somebody will get in and you know, take you over to the sort of sway you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a tough. Because she did it on her, she was very on her own, wasn't she, in that way? I know she had Julie and all that brilliant sort of ensemble of actors, but it was just her doing her very solo. But yeah, no, I it's one regret that I didn't try a bit harder, but she was
hard to get to know, really. I don't know how many close friends she had, really. Mm. She was a bit.
Kate Robbins was very close to her. She was good, you know, but I think, I was sort of too nervous and a bit too inexperienced and just, you know, I think everybody hates me anyway, so I don't.
See, I sort of once, I tried to influence. I said, no, you want to, you know, go on the Rover and command variety performance, say cunt. So I was trying to persuade her. I was trying to tempt her to the dark side, really. yes. That presumably made it. I don't know what kind of effect did that have on your life, and really.
Well, what was interesting was quite early on, everyone said, "Oh, you've been in Dinner Ladies now. You've worked with Victoria Woods. You're going to be a star." And I was like, "What does that mean?" You know, there was that sort of talk when you're in something, everyone gets very giddy, don't they? It's like, "Oh, that's it. Now you've been in a Vic thing. You're going to." And it obviously didn't work like that. And then all I got sent was sort of substandard. Sort of twinkle characters, you know, usually, you know, for good time girls, they like to put it. I was always having a bunk up it when I read the script, having a bunk up in the cupboard with somebody somewhere. You know, I think being northern and sort of a fuller figure, I got very stuck in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a bit like, oh, is this it? You know, but quite early on I thought, well, you know, the only person who can sort of change this is the only power you have as an actor is promise to say no. isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, or write your own stuff. But I was too lazy for that. I'm not talented enough. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. So, yeah, so it wasn't, I went off and did some theatre for quite a bit because I did think, oh, I'm going to get typecast. And I went and played some maids in theatres. So I got like,
I think you were playing a maid in our Marple, weren't you, as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was in the original book, she was about 82.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and insisted on having a club foot. I mean, that's when I think back now. I thought, what can I do? I wanted an eye patch, but Andy Wilson, the director, I'd worked with Andy before. And he said, absolutely not. So I ended up, which I really regretted. I mean, I had a built up like Doc Martin, and I played Havoc with my hips after a bit.
So I looked very, I had quite a nice suit. I think
you were very dapper.
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
no, I was sort of in love with Ian Ogilvie. It was Ian Ogilvie.
Oh my God, the saint. Can you remember who did it in the end? ITV7.
No, I can't. My fellow, when the phone rings, still goes, hello, Story Gates.
Was that the mentalist?
That was mine, as I came in with, and I kept getting told off because I had a tray. And once you give somebody a tray, you can't help but do the
Julie Walters,
I remember being told off a lot and not being able to look at Alex Jennings in the eye.
So anyway, carry on with your.
Well, I mean, what do you mean after Marple? Okay. That was Wicked Wheel.
That was it.
I made it. Did Dinner Ladies, did some theatre, did Early Doors, which was a little comedy set in a pub, Craig Cash film.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I did that. Yeah, I was only in one series of that. Janice, who worked in Tantastic, who used to do the robots upstairs and leave the baby down in the pub with Phil Mealy's character, who was possibly the father of the child. So I did that, which was probably one of my favourite jobs of all time because we filmed in a pub. Shouldn't really say this, should there be? Then we went to the pub and then to another pub and then to the press club and then to the hotel bar. So and then literally cleaned our teeth and went back to work. So
I always thought you were clean living.
Well, I wasn't. Yeah. I am now.
Yeah.
I am now.
Oh, that's the other thing we've got in common is we went to fake New Year's Eve together, didn't we, as it were? We went to Jules Holland's.
We did. That was in August.
Redmond, didn't you?
Are we
not?
I don't know, because I saw a woman. I was walking the dog on New Year's Day about 9 o'clock in the morning. This woman went, you were on Hoop Nanny last night. And I went, I know. She went, how have you got back so soon? It was filmed in August and she looked really upset.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, maybe I just said, I just drove straight. Anybody noticed that was on it, but we did in that funny place. It was miles away.
Maidstone.
Yeah,
it was. Anyway, so you're doing a bit of theatre.
So I did theatre. So I did Early Doors, and then Shameless was the next.
Of course, right.
Shameless was the next sort of.
I don't know why. I think I must have been gigging a lot or something because Shameless sort of passed me by and it was massive, wasn't it? Really?
Well, I was surprised. Yeah. I mean, I suppose I never really thought at the time, but it's only after, you know, because people say like, oh, it was like that pub, it was like Shameless or that stage, it's like Shameless, which I sort of don't usually like as a thing, you know. But it was interesting how it captured because when, honest to God, when we were filming, I was like, I read the script and went, oh my God, this is brilliant. I had to really fight to get, they wouldn't give me an audition because I'd been in Early Doors with James McAvoy and James McAvoy was already cast in Shameless. And the thing was, the line was, we don't want, you know, usual faces, blah, blah, blah. And I was right to the wire. They'd been casting around for Veronica and I ended up in my Early Doors outfit going.
So what year was this?
That is a good question. What was that? 28. So it's about 21 years ago.
Okay.
So what's that? It's about 2001, is that? No, that's not right, is it? No, 2002, 2003. Sorry, I don't like you putting my hand over my mouth. That's not good for a podcast.
No.
So anyway, blah, blah, blah. I ended up I really pushed and pushed for an audition because a really great friend of mine, Christine Bottomley, who'd read, gone and auditioned for a part and said, oh my God, there's this, I've just been up for this Paul Abbott thing. It's brilliant. And there's a part in it called Veronica. When I read it, I was like, how cheeky. She said, and I think you'd be perfect for it. So, and eventually, anyway, I got the audition and then I got a recall and then, luckily I ended up getting the job, but it was all very last minute.
How many series of that was there?
I think it carried on for years. I think there was about eight and left after three.
Right. But did that really put you in another league of...
Well, I think, yeah.
A huge show, wasn't it? Really? And you were much... I mean, I suppose you had more... It wasn't a sitcom. It was was something more.
Well, I think it felt like it had brought the mould a bit, hadn't it? At that time, it was that sort of bright, brash, fun, irreverent, wasn't it? Sort of... Yeah, but... Honestly, when we were filming it, I was like, I don't know what this is. I don't know. I watched some rushes and went, oh God, what is this? And I'd finished filming it, I went on tour doing some theatre. And when we were on tour, I remember it was on telly and some of the lads I was sharing digs with went, should we watch it? No, please don't. And then I couldn't believe how it sort of took off.
Yeah. And did you feel that you were a star then?
No, because you've heard it all before. You know what I mean? You hear it, not a lot, but people have said, this is the thing that'll,
And didn't it though, a bit?
I know I got into rooms. I definitely got into rooms I wouldn't have got into before. Again, similar, more slimmer girls having bunk ups this time.
Because you get did you get invited to, movie premieres?
No, I do remember. I think me and Dean got asked to present an award at the Brits, but I couldn't. I don't think he's ever forgiven me, but I was working, so I couldn't do it. That was the only thing. It still wasn't that.
Were you living in London then, or were you living in...
I was in London then, because, yeah.
And didn't you go to the Ivy and demand the best table and all that sort of stuff?
No, there was none of that, really. Because I think it was still seen as northern. I think after that there was Misfits and Skins, wasn't there? And then I think Misfits and Skins was made by the same company. And then I remember seeing and I think it's probably just the introduction of social media. You then sort those shows that people sort of bounced off. But I think because it was still, maybe because it was so sort of northern based. I don't know. I mean, James McAvoy was always on his way. Anne-Marie Duff was always, was very established.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think, but it did get me in auditions that I knew I'd got because it was, I think they do the thing where they go get somebody from Shameless thing. Because, it's a popular show. If you get somebody in, the viewers.
Did you buy a house and stuff? See, the other thing is, hang on, have you got a car?
I've got a car, yeah.
Because I pride myself on being able to guess what car.
Have
I done it already?
You've done it already.
All right. What did I say? Did I get it right?
You got it right, which was really weird. Well, if you can't remember.
I can't remember now.
Yeah.
It's a Peugeot. I've lost the ability now.
And I was like, that's weird. I've got an Audi.
Right,
A1, and that's but no, and I didn't have a car doing shit because I was still living in London. I only got a car when, I was going, I'm never getting a car, I don't need a car in London. And then when I moved up north, I was like, public transport's slightly different than London. So, because we didn't, I didn't get paid that much doing shit. They didn't get paid that much doing shit.
It's still a sort of choice, though, isn't it? You could have got yourself a publicist and,
Yeah, but again, got all that bollocks, that was all a bit of a new thing. James McAvoy had a publicist and we were all like, what's a publicist? And didn't know what, but that's because he was doing movies.
Yeah.
So he was the first person I'd actually stood in the same sort of room as who I knew, had a publicist. It was a whole new thing. That seemed to be the start then that more and more people were
getting on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after Shameless after that?
What did you have to Shameless? And then lots of nice little one. With Andy Wilson, I did Secret. Was that then? See No Evil. So I did the Myra Hindley. Well, it wasn't Myra Hindley drama. It was the drama about the Moors murders, which I played Myra Hindley.
Yeah, you were terrifying in there.
Oh, thank you. I did that. Again, that was a bit of a, you know, I was quite, if I wanted something, I wouldn't do it now. I'd be like, oh, I'm not bothered. But I would be, you know, again, it was like, I'd heard it was happening. I went, oh, I'd really love to be in that. And people, you know, friends were like, why would you want to do that? And I said, because that's what, it's fascinating. You know, that's what showing acting's about. And then they were a bit like, well, she's just done comedy and we don't think she's right. So I had to go through. There was lots and lots
even
of
then, audition. Because she'd done a lot of heavy shit by then.
No, I've not done really any heavy shit by then.
I've You've done in the theatre. Linda's seen you in all kinds of...
heavy shit.
Yeah. Linda, my gut churning.
Heavy shit.
Yeah.
But no, telly, I was still comedy. I've not done any heavy shit. And because I'd done, I think I remember in Secret, the Secret Diaries of a Call Girl, where it was Tracy Temple. Do you remember she had the affair with John Prescott?
I did
a little one-off with Andy Wilson, who directed Marple. So, and that was my first role not doing a Northern accent because she was from sort of London, home county. Well, that's not London, it's not home county. So, and then after See No Evil, that's when it became things. And then I got, because it just is, I don't know if you find it, it's whatever your last role was, people...
I don't act that much, really. People don't, you know.
Well, they should, too.
I know they should, I agree. I just work on Radio 4 all the time, doing various non-actory things. I think I didn't take acting. See, I mean, are you very... I mean, I imagine you are... I never took acting seriously enough. I wasn't, you know.
Yeah, no, but I think we are in a, aren't we now? I don't know whether people take it seriously or they take the profession seriously, which I find a bit jarring. You know, it's this laser, I don't want to sound like just a quote of somebody we've been talking about before, but this focus, this focus that people have, you know, I want to go to the States, I want to do, that's a different thing about them being just serious about what you...
Yes.
But I have to, I have to have fun as well. Else I'm not, I can't do. It has to be fun. Else I'm not very good if it's not.
Even the gut churning theatre stuff.
No, that's got to be more.
We've got to be more. Yes, well, that's true, isn't it? It's like that is, it's a sort of rule. If you're doing something unbelievably bleak, that's when you often have the best fun on a set, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, and even in theatre, I think you're always a fine line of. Even when I usually do more heightened stuff, that you could just go the other way.
We were going to do this last year, and you were in Latvia, Lithuania, somewhere.
What
were you doing then?
I was doing a film. I think it's called Mother Russia. It might be called Anna. I don't know the exact name yet. It's coming out. I don't know when it's coming out. We've got a screening in August. I'm playing Anna Politkovskaya, the Russian journalist
who was murdered by Putin.
Yeah. Well, I mean... she was murdered by
somebody
who didn't like her reporting.
Yeah.
You know, and she was a big critic of Putin.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's done as in the sort of Chernobyl type and won't be done in a...
Was it like how many episodes is it?
It's a one-off feature film. Whether it'll be, I don't know whether it'll get a cinema or it'll stream or, but a brilliant producer called Miriam Segal, who she's a production company called Good Films, and she, you know, it's one of her sort of passion projects. So, and she'd seen Anne, where I played Anne Williams, because I was a bit surprised when the script came. I was like, who do they want me to play? And they were like, oh, Anna. And I was like, really? Oh, okay. You know, and we had lovely, Jason Isaacs was in it.
All right.
He was fabulous and very lovely. We had Kieran Hines was in it. So there was all these
big beasts.
I know, big hitters. Yeah. And then little me going, hiya, lads.
I'm exposing the what led to the second Chechen war.
I think that tea don't taste very well. Oh, I think so. Excuse me.
Oh, no, don't.
Don't, my lad. because I kept saying, but it was interesting because they were saying, well, we wanted to do it in English accents. And I said, well, I'm not doing it RP.
Yeah.
I said, because what are we saying then? We do this strange sort of, we think, well, if someone's educated in Moscow, for Moscow, then they would sound, they'd be RP in it. And I think we've got to smash it. So, I mean, yeah. I didn't do it as broad as, because, you know, I'm a working class girl from Bolton. So, I, you know, not my accent probably gives that away. So I've softened it. I softened it off, but I sort of resisted, you know, going, I'll do it. Like, because then it gives it, I just thought that loses.
I think that's always better. I mean, people doing kind of card Russian accents, I think is always mistake.
It's hard. Then it doesn't make any sense because you go, well, you're doing, you speak in English in a Russian accent. Well, either get Russian actors and get subtitles or just don't.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make, why speaking another language? Anyway.
No, I think that works really well.
Yeah. So we'll see. You know, it was an honour, and it was really interesting, obviously, being over in Riga at that point. And
which brings us to our other shared hobby, which is politics, really.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Tell us about your journey.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's a sort of, not, I'm not similar, but, you know, I had a step grandfather, if I'm being precise, who was in the Communist Party. So he was in the Communist Party, and he was a big influence on me. He'd always said, keep out politics. Don't get involved.
Oh, that's worked out well for you,
hasn't
it? Yeah,
he said, if you want to be an actor, don't go down that route. But because he'd spent a lot of his life, he worked at Leyland Motors, he was on the assembly line, he'd had jobs all over, and he basically spent a lot of his time being sacked for union activity, for his political activity, for selling the Morning Star. So he spent a lot of time, and he was very sort of protective in that way of don't get involved. And then 18, I joined the party, and he was like, please. I wanted to join earlier, and he said, I would rather you didn't, but if you want to, you know, promise me you'll wait till you're 18. So I waited till I was 18. And then,
how was that experience?
Well, it was a lovely experience in the way that by the time I joined, and it was a Salford branch, because that was the nearest to me in Bolton, there was only about six of us then. And Ruth and Eddie Frow, who everyone was, I think I was the youngest, probably about 40, 50 years.
Right.
So I met the most amazing sort of comrades who were probably in the 60s, 70s then.
Where was the world, and where were they ideologically at that point? Really?
Well, it was interesting because this was sort of late 80s, early 90s. And I remember having lots of discussions with them about how do we attract, you know, younger membership, how do we get to younger audience? And I was saying very much at that time, it felt like the thing was you dropped out of society. You know, it was rave culture. It was, new age travellers. It was that sort of, anybody felt like they were political, you know, in that some ways were dropping out, you know, were sort of dropping out from the establishment, from politics. So it was quite, you know, it felt then the left especially was at a real low ebb, you know, and, yeah, and the, you know, the Communist Party was a lot.
Hadn't really, yeah.
But, you know, for an experience of, like, say, Ruth and Eddie Frow, who started the Working Class Movement Library, amazing Henry Suss, Frank Williamson, they were, I don't know, they were just, and Anne Suss as well, they were just amazing people who, you know, I'd lived a life, and just to see, you know, I've just been to a thing today, Matt's Memorial Library, and that was about the, you know, the commemoration of the Spanish Civil War and the Battle of Ebro, and Dolores Long, whose dad, Sam Wilde, was one of the brigaders, and she was reading, you know, a testament, and you just think, wow, you know, these people who, they did whatever you think, they went to fight fascism and put their life on the line, and where we are. And then you get
they didn't go to Oxford and do PPE and then go and be a researcher for Ed Balls and then get a safe fucking seat.
Exactly. Yeah. They went and, you know, and a lot of them didn't come back. And we were outside the memorial today that they brought back from Spain, which is some neo-fascists in Spain. Wrestled it back, but they'd smashed it and then cut it into three pieces, which are the actual plaque that had the names of the dead at Ebro. And they'd, so if you go to the back of the Marx Memorial Library, it's screwed to the wall, but it's been angle grinded into three pieces. Because
when did that happen?
I think that was like 2000. And, I think it came back to the Marx Memorial Library in like 2017. So right. it was previous. They've replaced it. Right. Marx Memorial Library said we'll take it.
Take the original one.
Yeah.
So what? So after did you stay in? So what happened after?
No,
the
I didn't stay in the party long. To be honest, I went off to London. I skipped off to London with my little handkerchief tied to a stick. I did a little bit. I stayed in for a little bit. But yeah, it wasn't. You know, the membership was quite low. It was a lot older. I got my head turned. I wanted to be an actor. I mean, And so I sort of drifted away. But I always felt, you know what I mean? There was always that saying, wasn't there? A communist is a socialist through music. I've never got like that. But I just, you know, and then I was looking for something. I didn't know what it was. And the Communist Party was my only sort of point of reference because of my granddad, you know, and then... You know, and it was always that. He used to say to me, watch the trots, don't get him with the trots.
Oh, yeah.
No, you know, all that sort of.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then you get in the, it's just that whole, the infighting on the left is something.
It is a thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, did you stay engaged or were you completely disengaged?
No, I stayed engaged.
So what would you benefits and stuff like that?
You know, a lot of the time, you know, I mean, marches and, yeah, I mean, while I was studying, I still go to a few educational days with the YCL and things like that, you know. But politically, you know, I'm at drama school, but it was so seen as, but I was at drama school when Blur got in, not the band, but that's where Blair got, when Tony Blair got in, you know, I still remember being in the reception area and everyone jumping up and down for joy and just sneaking off to the phone box and putting 10p and my granddad going, hiya. And I went, hiya. And he went, it won't be any different. I went, oh no, everyone's really excited. I've had to come out because I don't want to seem like a killjoy. Yeah. You know, we had a big chat on the phone. And
I think Linda was excited for like 10 minutes. And then when she saw that stage kind of walk up to Downing Street, she went off it then, really. It lasted about a day, really, her enthusiasm.
So that was that, really. But and then...
And you were you very involved with the museum, library, what is it?
Working Class Movement Library.
Yeah.
Because when I was in the Communist Party, the meetings were held in the annex of the Working Class Movement Library, which Ruth and Eddie Farrow started. So, to be honest, what happened was I can't remember, it's probably about 15, maybe 20 years ago. I can't remember, it was for some charity, and they said, oh, can we take a picture of in Manchester in a place that means something to you? And I was like, could do the Rally Exchange, but that sort of theatre. And I'd only done a couple of plays there then. And it was actually my partner, Pav, said, what about the Working Class Movement Library? Because you used to go, you know, I'd always go back to events there with my granddad, book signings, and I, you know, he used to love going back and seeing, you know, all the old comrades. And so I said, there. So I went and had my picture taken, and then while I was there, I got chatting, and I said, look, you know, is there anything I can do to get involved? So they said, oh, well, you know, we'll think about it. And I did, you know, bits of sort of publicity for them. And then they asked me if I'd be a trustee, which was probably like one of the proudest. It's funny, isn't it?
That you go,
I was like, what? They were like, we'd like to invite you on the trustee.
Where is it? Is it in Salford?
It's on the Crescent in Salford, across from Salford University.
I don't know Manchester at all, really, but it seems to be going out to Media City or whatever it is, that so much must have happened that was vital to the history of working class politics, and it all seems to have been demolished.
Yeah.
Is there anything left in sort of Salford?
Well, there's a library. Where else in Salford would we say, you know, we've got the People's History Museum in Manchester.
But yeah, I just wonder whether it's deliberate sometimes to erase, you know, physically.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know. And obviously Salford now is, you know, Manchester's expanding at the rate of knots. And that's why I spoke to a friend today who's a massive fan of yours. I'm sure she won't. I won't say her last name because she might get shy. But my friend Michelle, and she's born and bred Salford. And she said, I'm moving to Didsbury. And I went, oh, Didsbury? I said, you're a bit posh. And she went, I can't afford a flat in Salford. She wanted to buy a flat. She's like a bit younger than me. She decided, she went, you know, I'm going to buy a flat. And she said, I can't afford it now because it's so... And I was like, but, you know, Didsbury was always the zhuzhy area.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's really interesting now.
Yeah.
It's changed. But I suppose because Salford's so near, maybe, you know, and I don't think people realise they're in Salford. They still think they're in, you know.
Manchester. Yeah, it's the lines are blurred, aren't they? I mean, what do you think it means to be on the left? Why are you still on the left, really?
Because I care.
Yeah.
I know I've probably got a very simplistic, you know, I'm not intellectual. I'm not an intellectual lefty, obviously, at all. You know, but for me, it's always about the emotional connection of being on the left, which is about justice, fairness and caring. And you know, what has boggled my brain is how all of a sudden we've been seen as... you know, devil incarnate for just wanting the best for people.
I know, it's extraordinary. I was like, you know, that thing about being cranks. Are you still going on about fairness?
Yeah.
Bloody like Jesus. Jesus, is he still going on about giving the... If you've got two coats, give one away. Jesus, get your head out your ass.
What's happened? Well, we know what's happened, but it's just... I mean, it took me a while. It was like... Oh, your oxygen's completely sucked. I remember for a bit going, I'm just going to bed and I'm staying. I'm not, there's no point. I can't engage. What can I do? I'm just, I feel. And then you've got, you know, it's like today going to events, talking to you. Of course, there's people, you just feel you have to look for your groups a little bit more. Mm. And I think people are running scared a bit, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. People are really intimidated, I think. Because obviously I got involved in all this hoo-ha with this Jeremy Corbyn film. And, you know, people won't show it. They're frightened, you know. And there's a twin, what they do is there's a twin track approach, I think, that they get any venue that gets, you know, says you are screening something that, you know, is anti-Semitic or whatever, you know, which is obviously completely untrue. And then there's also, you know, anonymous threats of arson and, you know, violence and people, you can understand why people.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, intimidated, really, you know.
But it, yeah, I'm just, but where do we go? You know, how do we regroup, reform? But then I suppose being on the left, it's sort of a brilliant friend of mine, Linda Clare, once said, you know, and I was a bit despondent, and she went, and Linda's like in her late 70s now, and she said, Maxine, you've just got to take pleasure in the struggle. That's, you know what I mean? Like, oh, but Linda, it's not. Sometimes you just think, well, you know, and I don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
Or those people who get to a certain age and then go right to the other end of the spectrum because you sort of, you go,
well, yes. I think, how do they live with themselves?
I don't know. I think what happens. But then our whole political spectrum has shifted, hasn't it? Anyway, you know, I speak to people now and I go, that's not left. They're not left politics that you know, the new libertarianism and the individual. And I find myself a little bit gobsmacked sometimes with what people think is liberal thought or left or left thought. And what they say, like, what's left.
What?
Well, I was laughing today. I was listening on the radio today and I just caught the tail end of a Tory MP being interviewed and he said, well, if you want Keir Starmer and a socialist government. I nearly crashed my car. But I was like, hang on. But I suppose that's still the stick that the, you know, they're going, you know, frightening people.
If only.
Yeah. But then you look at Mick Lynch and you look at the RMT, you know, Alex Gordon was at the event I was at today. And they're creating something, aren't they? You
know I mean, Mick Lynch is amazing. He's a real exemplar, I think, for all of us in terms of how you handle the media, really, because he doesn't get distracted. He's so on top of what he's saying as well. And he attacks people. I mean, he's always on the front foot.
Yeah.
He never apologises.
Yeah.
He's always like, I guess it's intuitive, really, but I can't imagine he's ever had any media training.
Yeah.
But he's a real exemplar, I think, of how you how you behave, I think,
I think the union in general, haven't they? The R&T have managed, they've sort of...
My dad's union?
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Well, it's cast the net, haven't they? They've brought everybody on, I think, on board, and you know what I mean? And this is the whole... I don't know. I just think... Well, I've always been brought up that you join a union. That's the only protection that we've... And I know, obviously, over the years... You know, they've had a battering and whatnot, but I think he feels like he's taken some, given the people some power back, or they're feeling represented.
And it is. I think if you're halfway decent, you don't go on that journey of just becoming going to the right.
I just think there's muddy waters now, isn't there, with people a bit.
Oh yeah.
There's some, who think they're decent. I don't know, but I mean, if you read enough of that stuff, it gets in there, doesn't it? I suppose you just don't read it, but people do, don't they?
It's, I don't know if you're sure, when in Lost in Translation, when Scarlett Johansson tells Bill Murray that she studied philosophy, and he says, there's a dollar in that game. It's like being left wing, isn't it?
Are we on a? I don't know. I don't. Yeah, but yeah. You can't help it though, can you? It is like a religion. It's what you believe. It's the whole basis of who you are, I think.
Yes.
And you don't criticize somebody's religion like you criticize somebody's politics. Now. In a way, and I think, well, it's my belief system. Why is that? Because there's no head of it, unless, but it's what I believe, and I think, well, that's my beliefs. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you. Yeah.
So, but we get attacked in a way that you wouldn't.
I know it is. I mean, it's a very different world we're living in now, isn't it, really? And I don't know that it's going to get any easier, really.
No.
I know you got caught in a particular...
And I just wasn't prepared. I'm not saying I wasn't expecting something along the line to come up because of my politics or whatever.
But it was an early example of Keir Starmer's utter dishonesty as well, really, whole thing,
I just, and you become, then it was just navigating it. You don't know how to navigate it without upsetting people, making things worse, trying to explain yourself and then feeling maybe you end up digging a bigger hole. I haven't got that. You know what I mean? I just sort of thought, I don't know. I was surprised how difficult I found it.
Yeah.
But then from all sides, I was getting a lot of pressure, you know what I mean? And people that...
What happened?
Do you know the stuff? Do you want to explain the...
There'll be people listening who won't know, if you want to tell them.
Yeah, I... I'd done an interview with The Independent and we were talking about... it started off a conversation about George Floyd, and I was talking about the fact that... around the global exchange police training tactics around the world. And I'd mentioned Israel.
True. AIPAC pays for hundreds of police officers every year. The Anti-Defamation League, I think it is, pays for hundreds of US police officers to go to Israel, for training. Mm. And they're not being trained in being community coppers, are they? You know, Dixon the Doc Green style kind of friendly policing. They're being trained in how to repress brown population.
Yeah, and what I wanted to talk about was the fact that round the world there is a global exchange of these tactics, whoever's doing, And of course it got boiled down to... And then
And then your MP, Rebecca Long-Bailey, retweeted it.
Yes, and she was asked, because she said she retweeted it and said I was a diamond, and then she was asked by the leadership to take it down, which she didn't do immediately, so then she was sacked. So then it started a whole, you know what I mean?
And that was the first of the, that was, she was the first of the, first they came for Rebecca Long Bailey. And yeah. I mean, that was the start of the page, yeah. really, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, so, and, yeah, and then you get mixed feelings. I think, oh, I feel really good.
Yeah,
you know,
it's awful.
Rebecca.
You feel
and
terrible.
And then I was thinking,
yeah.
you know, because I know her. She's my, you know, she's, so I, you know, I rung her and, you know, and she was very sort of, look, you know, it's, this has happened and blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was a, it, and it was because, I think because it was during lockdown as well. So
right.
it was in this time when, what can I say, everyone, you know, we were isolated and all of a sudden
yeah.
this whole thing's kicking off. And, you know, I remember sort of, you know, my fella going, oh, there's people, you know, there's some journalists at the front door and he's, but, you know, he just sort of fielded everybody and sort of, you know, and then people ringing from all over and friends ringing upset and other friends for different reasons and people from, you know, it became, and, you know, and the sad thing was some friends are like, you need to explain, you, and then other friends sticking up for me, you know, and getting in. Oh, it just, it was madness.
Yeah.
But how it all escalates from something and then,
yeah. And
know,
of course,
and
I
the
think
hate
that,
that I got was,
yeah,
was something
I imagine,
extraordinary
yeah.
that, and you can't, you know, and you want to say to, there was a few people that doesn't say, well, you know, you want to say, should we meet for, let's meet for a cup of tea and we can talk about this. And I, you know, yeah, yeah. So anyway, that was.
I don't think, and they that. Don't go through, I mean, the right don't go through any of that because they've got no, it's all calculation, is it? They've
yeah.
got no feelings.
And my whole thing is about upsetting anybody. You know, I had friends who were thinking, oh, Jewish friends were thinking, oh my God, I up, you know, the first thing was I up there, and there were Jewish friends who were sticking up for me on Twitter who were sending me the stuff there. And I was going, please stop getting involved. And, you know, and friends who don't agree with me, but, you know, it was just, but were still sticking. It was this sort of, you get stuck in this sort of madness, and then, you know,
yeah.
I only got one friend who rung me, who was a Jewish friend, and said, oh, I'm really upset, but please tell me this is not true. And I was like, oh God, please, let's be for a cup of tea. It's really not, course I'm not. And oh, but it was hard because you're trying to navigate everyone's feelings as well. You,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You sort of go, I don't know. Yeah, you just think, oh, my first thing is I felt like I'd let everybody down, you know, and but yeah, I mean, and from, yeah, I don't know. And
yeah, but that's
going,
how
but
they
then,
get.
Yeah, and then,
that's
but then
how they
when
get,
you go,
yeah.
I've got to,
yeah.
But, and then I was trying, you know what I mean? But you think, but then I don't want to look like I'm running away from what I believe in either. But I just felt like I got backed into a corner. I thought, I'm not very good at this. I'm not. I don't feel I'm articulate enough, and that's, I just was that sort of
you
thing.
You should have had going. James McAvoy's publicist. They would.
I must admit, though, I do have a publicist now, and they were fantastic with it. You know what
well,
I mean?
I think you need people on your yeah. side, really.
Yeah.
You know, you
really,
can't.
They were really brilliant
yeah.
and very, because I'd not long gone with them, and I thought, oh, this will be a phone call saying thanks, but
yeah.
know, I really don't want to have to deal with this, but they really held my hand through it.
That's nice.
You know,
yeah.
But it does make you a bit wary, but also as well, it makes you a bit more battle hardened, and you go, okay, all I've learned is next time get your facts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's other ways I could
yeah.
have tried to make a point about what was happening in Palestine
sure.
without
yeah.
doing that. And actually, you know, after I mean, you know what I mean? There's
yeah.
there's other ways.
Yeah, you have to be, you know.
Yeah.
You do have to. I mean, as Mick Lynch, you know, you have to be completely. I mean, that is demanded of us, that we have to be completely on top of the shit we're saying. Really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you can't just throw into conversation a maybes or I've heard
yeah.
or if you haven't got the hard facts in front of you, then you can't. You know, that was
yeah.
a real lesson. Then you can't just bandy stuff about
no.
that you think may be true because you'd read it somewhere and seen an Amnesty International report on it. But, you know, that's.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. Well, should we end it there?
No.
I don't know. Do you want to end on a more upbeat note?
No, I mean that's yeah.
You want to plug your latest show? What you're doing?
What am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm having nothing to plug.
I think it's you're playing a murdered journalist.
I'm playing that. Hopefully, yeah, and that's where. And what else? You know, sometimes you go, I forgot about that. There's a few. I've done a few films that I don't know. You know, and you got maybe I'll never see the light of day. Who knows? I did a great little film with James Marsh and director with Gabriel. I got to work with Gabriel Byrne. That was quite exciting.
All right.
He was playing Samuel Beckett.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that, I don't know when that's out.
I've worked with Gabriel Byrne. It was where he met his, well, Ellen Barkin. It was a film, a bizarre film that I did in Spain where he met his missus. Anyway, it's going to come plug something else. What else have we got?
You know you're much loved, Maxine. Like, you are a diamond. She was right. The party I left to come here, I told some friends that I was coming in. They nearly fainted. And everyone was, like, really excited, more than any other guest we've had on the show.
More than Diane Morgan.
Well, you have a legendary status, and people adore you. And the girls were gushing. They were like, tell her that she turned me gay for a short time.
Oh, it's always my fault.
You should tell us where you've been. Just what? Go on.
Yeah, have you come back from a party?
Have you been to a party, Talal? What was it?
Oh, yeah.
I was at my friend's cat's birthday party. In Norwood.
It was what's the cat called?
Spectacular affair. His name's Mojo.
Oh, happy birthday, Mojo.
Happy birthday, Mojo. You're a good boy, Mojo.
How's your dog, Che? Is he?
Castro.
I thought he was called Che.
No, Castro.
I'm sorry.
He's good. He's very good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because we did a radio play during lockdown that I'd written that you did, and Castro kept interjecting.
Yeah, he gets a bit, But no, he's very good, little cutie that he is. Yeah.
You see, we're human. We love dogs.
Yeah.
We love dogs. We'll testify where he's been wandering around. All right, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
I think I could... We should do part two, really, because I feel like I haven't
even
scratched the surface. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that was fantastic. I hope you feel you know me a bit better. I hope you feel you know Maxine and know and love Maxine. More than you do already. She's truly a both very talented person, but also a very good person. And we should plug our Patreon, which I can never, you say it.
Yeah, okay. If you want to support the show, support what we do. We're back, baby. We're back making episodes. We've been away for a while.
On the audio.
We're back and we're going to do bike rides. And if you want to help fund all of that and also get access to bonus content, such as Alexi and Lisa Mayer and Nigel Plain are watching The Young Ones.
Yeah, it'll that's be amazing.
Episode two of that will be coming shortly. And then there's also...
Me at the gun range, which is, of course, which not everybody is pleased with.
We lost some Patreon support thanks to... No. There's a weird video of Alexi shooting guns at a gun range and there's no educational benefit. Well, no, actually, it is probably educational.
Yeah.
You learn about the guns.
Yeah,
but that's there, and that's it looks really cool and cinematic.
Where else are you gonna get a podcast that covers firearms and Marxism?
And me and my brother showed up there. We got to shoot guns too. There was a big boom boom bang bang one that shot tiny little cannonballs out. That one was incredible.
The black powder.
You got there. Burnt your finger on that one. If you want to see Alexi burn his finger on a big bang bang gun. Then go to patreon.com/AlexiSalePodcast. It's all there. And you can donate from any amount, like a small amount to a large amount, and you get access to all those videos and you'll be helping the show. And you'll be helping pay my wages as a struggling actor and comedian. Yes. I God knows I need. And you'll be helping to pay for Ogmios's road fine.
The many fines that we tempted Ogmios into,
So come along, chip in, join the team, be a comrade. Let's go. All right, that's the plug done.
Yep.
All right, thanks for listening.
All right, thank you. Bye bye. You've been listening to the Alexi Sale Podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkuti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.